So we want to welcome everyone to biochemistry with Anders Zimmermann in the fifth floor lecture hall. This is a very special opportunity for us in the community. It's also, I guess, Dr. Zimmermann's reunion of sorts. We're having her back on campus for the first time in
21 years.
21 years. So if you want to, if you want to feel accomplished as an Einstein graduate in 21 years, you look back and see whether or not you've accomplished what Dr. Zimmermann has. You know how you've done. But really, it's a tremendous honor, and I really do mean that very seriously. Dr. Zimmermann is really, I think, a first-class example of what it means to be an Einstein graduate, or what it means to combine many years of scholarship, I think two full cycles of Dafyomi, if I understand correctly, combined with real medical expertise. She's a practicing pediatrician, most importantly in Camp Morasha for a couple of summers, where I got to know Dr. Zimmermann a little bit. And really, she's someone whose whole life brings together in a very beautiful way commitments to halacha, yirat shamayim, and really halachic observance and knowledge of the first order, and combining that with her medical expertise. She's published a book on the mitzvah of Taras HaMashiach, and it's available. It's certainly available after the lecture. I wasn't paid to say this, but we own one on our own, so we have. So it's a fantastic work. If you take a look, Jewish Family Life. And everyone's ready to take a look after her. But really excited Dr. Zimmermann could come here. She's really a role model, I think, for all of us, for what we believe that Einstein graduates can do, can become, and ultimately can contribute to the Jewish community and her work as a USET, and is really pioneering work on the internet and all that she does. So we thank her very much for fitting us in. She's just in for Israel. She really worked this out for us, and really excited that she could make it, and we thank you very much.
Okay, you're very welcome. It's very exciting to be back here. The Einstein Synagogue has a special place in my heart because I was actually the president while I was in medical school. Which in of itself was an interesting halachic decision. It was actually brought to Rabbi Lamb at the time, and he said, women shul presidents. Shul presidents, there is an issue of srara, in other words, having women in executive position. However, shul president is a service position, and women are great at that. Go ahead. So what I wanted to do with you in about like the next half hour or so is, first of all, to share with you a couple of sources that are near and dear to my heart as a practicing pediatrician, and then also talk to you a little bit about what the Yoetzet Halacha program is, and then make sure to leave plenty of time for questions. Okay, if anything I say along the way isn't clear, feel free to raise your hand and ask me. But I'm also planning to leave time for questions at the end. So one of the things that pediatricians spend a lot of time dealing with is safety prevention. Okay, and that's because what is now called non-intentional trauma, okay, is the politically correct word to use for it, because if we would just say accidental, that would mean that it has nothing to do that we can do about it, but in fact it has actually been shown that there are things that one can do to prevent injury. And the verse that usually gets thrown around in terms of dealing with this is Nishmartem Me'od Nafshotechem. However, if you go and you read the entire verse of Nishmartem Me'od Nafshotechem, you will see that it says, in other words, what this verse is actually talking about is not building idols and not worshiping idols, and has nothing directly to do with safety. On the other hand, however, there is a specific direct halacha in the Torah having to do with safety prevention, and that is din ma'akeh. Okay, this comes in Dvarim Perikav Bet Chet. If you build a new house, you shall make a fence for the roof, and do not cause blood in your house, or you shall not have any bloodletting that is due from your house if somebody should fall from it. Now, you might have think that's very nice. Okay, you're building a house, you should make a fence. It only has to do with houses. But in fact, the way that it is brought down in halacha is that this has to do with preventing any kind of injury. Okay? We see this actually two times in the Shulchan Aruch, one of which is in Choshen Mishpat Taf Kaf Zayin. V'chein kol mechshol sheyesh bo sakanat nefashot, mitzvat aseh lehasiro, lishamer mimenu, lizaher badavar yafeh, shene'emar, hishamer lecha ushmor nefshecha, ואם לא הסיר והניח משלות המביאים לידי סכנה, ביטל מצוות עשה ועבר בלא תשים דמים. That any kind of pitfall that can prevent a danger to life, it is a positive commandment to remove it and to be very careful of it and to be very cautious in this matter. And you know when the Shulchan Aruch is being very redundant that he is trying to really, really stress the point because he's usually relatively careful about his words. And he brings in a number of verses, one of which is similar to the Nishmartem Lo Nasha Techem, but the real punchline is that if you do not remove this, and you do not get rid of these pitfalls that can lead to danger, we have a double whammy here. Vitel mitzvah taseh, you have gotten rid of a positive commandment, v'avar belo tasim damim, and you have also transgressed a negative commandment. Because in that verse that I started out with is actually two mitzvot to the Torah, not only one. Second time this comes up in the Shulchan Aruch is in Yoredea, Siman Kaf Tet Zayin, where he lists all kinds of practices that its purpose is for health prevention, many of whom are not applicable today. However, his summary is, V'chein yizahem mikol advarim hamavim l'dei sakana. You have to be careful of all things that might possibly lead to danger. Ki sakanta chamira me'esura. Because danger is more stringent than Iser. And actually, that's true on a halachic level, because when you're talking about Iser in many cases, if you're talking about, for example, a non-kosher piece of meat, so either it's, depending on the circumstances, it might be batel barov, it might be rendered null by the majority, it might be batel b'shishim, it might be null for 60 times. But when we're talking about danger to a person's life, we don't use those numbers, okay? If somebody is sick on Shabbos, as you will see many times during your life, and there is even a possibility that it could in fact be that abdominal pain is the appendicitis, you're going to be mechallel Shabbos. I put that in quotation marks because it's not actually mechallel Shabbos, it's actually observing Shabbos, and send that person to the hospital, okay? So you don't use the same statistics because sakanta is chamira meyasura. And when we have a doubt having to do with sakana, we have to worry about it even more than we have the safek of an isur. That has to do with sort of, negative things, preventing injury. But we also have another famous quote that is useful in trying to do health promotion, something we try as doctors to do very often, and if people listen to us 10% of the time, we're happy. Ho'il v'hiyot haguf bari v'shalem mitarkei Hashem hu. Shaharei ei efshar sheyavin o yeda davar miyediyat haborei v'hu chole. Lefichach tzarich l'archik adam atzmo midvarim hamavdim et haguf, ulehanhig atzmo bedvarim hamavrim v'machlimim. As a whole and healthy body are one of the ways of Hashem, and it's impossible that one will understand or know the Creator when he is ill, one has to distance oneself from things that destroy the body and engage in practices that are healthful and healing. Now, one of the things that sometimes is brought up as far as a quote that would seem to contradict what I'm talking about is a phrase, Shomer Pitaim Hashem, God protects the fools. And it's a phrase that's been many times in the discussion, for example, about whether smoking is halachically prohibited or not. I would argue, yes. But the counter arguments are very often, this idea of Shomer Pitaim. What I want you to see is this is where Shomer Pitaim comes up in the Gemara. Okay? One of them has to do, the first one has to do with the situation about that one should not do a brit milah on a cloud day. And they say, Ha'inna d'dashu be'rabim shomer p'tayim Hashem. Nowadays, when people have, in fact, made a brit on a cloudy day, nothing seems to happen, we're not worried about it. Okay, it also talks about a situation that if somebody ate grapes or figs in the middle of the night, we don't have to worry about that because Hashem will protect him. And the third example Shalosh nashim b'sham shopemoch. This is talking about which women are allowed to use contraception. Ktana meuberet u'minika. And the discussion has to do with a woman who is prepubertal, a woman who is already pregnant, and a woman who is nursing. And then there's a discussion, they can, they can't, but the Chachamim come and say they should not use contraception because Shomer B'tayim Hashem. Now, what do you notice about those three examples? What are the chances of those women getting pregnant in the first place? Pretty small, okay? Certainly the first two, and even if we're in the first 6 months or so, the third one. In other words, Shomer B'tayim Hashem is something to be used in situations where the chances of the danger happening were very small to begin with. Okay? It does not apply to standing in the middle of the street and letting the car come and say, Shomer B'tayim Hashem. It does not apply to being in a car and not wearing your seatbelt. And it does not apply to smoking. Okay. So I just wanted to give that to you. This did not transfer very well to this form, but I'll explain it in a second. That was just to give you a little bit of a background in terms of how, at least in my personal life, knowing halacha and being involved in halacha is inseparable from my practice as a physician. Okay? And I use these phrases very often in trying to talk to my patients. I happen to live in a frum community, so they have some idea what I'm talking about. But it certainly has also been one of the guiding principles in terms of my practice. I mean, it's interesting because people very often say, what's it like to be a frum doctor? And, you know, everyone's thinking about how you're going to deal with Shabbos or not deal with Shabbos. But I say it's actually very easy being a frum doctor because it's the only profession that has its own siman in the Shulchan Aruch. Okay? It actually goes down as a mitzvah itself to be saving people's lives. And I find that very inspiring. I want to shift gears a little bit and tell you a little bit about the Yoatzot Halacha program. The Yoatzot Halacha program has now existed for 10 years. Matter of fact, about 2 weeks ago, we just had a grand re-graduation where while originally the certificates were given to the Yoatzot were time limited for 10 years and then needed to be reissued, they have now decided after 10 years to give lifetime certification. So it was a re-graduation at the end of a 10-year program, partially because I was being a nudge and saying, our certificates say 10 years. You have to decide what you're going to do if it says 10. But we had a very nice celebration from it. And Yoatzot Halacha is a program that was devised by Rabbi Nit Henkin from Nishmat, which is actually now the Jenny Sassenstein Center for the Advanced Torah Study for Women, has a new name. Yoatzot Halacha are women who were trained by Nishmat. And the whole goal of this is to be a resource for women when questions come up in Tarat HaMishpacha. Or Hilchot Nida, or what else you want to call it. As you're probably aware, this area of Jewish law governs a physical relationship between a married couple, sometimes also called mikvah. Now, in order to be a Yoatzot Halacha, women have trained, it's actually now 60 women at this point, have trained in Nishmat's Karen Ariel program. It's a 2-year program, which adds up to be more than 1,000 hours. And the program basically is a combination of the traditional curriculum that is taught to men who are studying for the rabbinate in this area of halacha, supplemented by many professional courses having to do with things that overlap, gynecology, psychology, family counseling, marital therapy, I mean, lots of things. I'm going to skip over a little bit what Hilchot Nida are, and go in a little bit more in terms of why that was felt to be a need for Yoatzot Halacha. I mean, the idea came up when Rabbi Nit Henkin herself was a practicing rebbetzin in the Beit She'an area of Israel, and she and her husband noticed that they got a lot of questions about Shabbos, they got a lot of questions about Kashrut, and they got almost no questions about Tarat HaMishpacha. And I sort of have this feeling here that something's wrong with this equation, and that perhaps the reason women are not asking questions is because they're embarrassed to ask a male rabbi, and if there were a female address that one could ask questions, perhaps more questions would be asked. Not asking questions in Taharat HaMishpacha has a number of real potential side effects, one of which is marital stress from being needed longer than one needs to be. It can lead to infertility, particularly halachic infertility. If a woman is using the mikveh after the point she's ovulating, she's just not going to get pregnant, even if there's nothing medically the matter with her at all. And it also can lead to incorrect halachic practice. In answer to this need, we started the Karen Ariel program 10 years ago, 1999. We're the first graduates. In 2000, a hotline was started, still exists to this day from the U.S. It's a toll-free hotline, 1-877-YOETZET. And there is also a website that was started in 2002, and at the end I'll show you actually the website is now about five different websites altogether. I'm going to give you a couple of examples of the kinds of questions that have come into the website, okay, to give you an idea of what is the role that the website is playing. And these are real questions off the website. My particular role right now as Yoetzet is that I run the various websites. I've been married for 6 months now and have tried five different types of birth control pills. I'm always spotting between periods and it's very hard on me. Not even a week after coming from the mikvah, I'm in Nida again, and it lasts until my period, and the cycle keeps on returning. I just don't know what to do anymore. Help. Now, just as a medical tip here, this person's doctor made a big mistake, because nobody should be able to get through five different types of birth control pills in 6 months, because we know that the breakthrough bleeding rate of any pill when you started is somewhere in the range of 30 to 40%. However, more than 50% of the women will be fine the next month. And therefore, any time a woman is on any particular formulation, she should be staying on it for 2 to 3 months before she switches over to something else. So by simple math, it should have never gotten to five. Women also use the website because they feel more comfortable. Real quote, I'd like to thank you for having such a wonderful organization, a place where religious women can have their private questions answered in a comfortable setting. Thank you for this wonderful site. I have already asked several questions. I don't think I would feel comfortable finding out this information any other way. And I think that's one of the things that we've learned the most over the last 10 years, because having been in the first classes of Yoetzet Halacha, everyone who was in there sort of had this feeling that, in fact, there were women who did not ask questions, but nobody could possibly quantify it because nobody had ever asked. We now, on the hotline, have gotten over 100,000 questions, okay? And the vast majority of the women, some point in the conversation, say something like, I would have never asked this question before. I never did ask this question before. I haven't gone to the mikvah for a year and a half because I never asked this question before. There's no question that there is a need for it. The purpose of Yoetzot Halacha is not to be there for women who do feel perfectly comfortable to their rabbis. I mean, if it's not broke, don't fix it. And we're not trying to change the tradition, but it's very much to try to fill in for those women who don't, and they're really out there. Okay, another thing that women get from it, especially from the website where you have the opportunity to read. There have been 9,000 questions have come to the website already, of which about 3,000 have been posted. I just want to say what a wonderful thing you women are doing for all of B'nai Yisrael. I've been reading through this website and have learned a few new things. I see that I'm not alone with my problem. From that quote of things like B'nai Yisrael, people often ask, you know, who asks questions to the website? And based on the terminology that many people ask, it's across the board. Okay? I don't think it's your average modern Orthodox person who said B'nai Yisrael, or even says things like the Mahala, okay, when they're trying to ask a question about cancer. Okay, another thing that Yoetzot Halacha can provide is an opportunity for people to talk about their feelings having to do with Taharat HaMishpacha. I mean, I don't think too many people would go in to ask a shaila to the rabbi and say, I hate this, okay, but they do feel comfortable talking to Yoetzot about feelings that come up, and very often as part of the conversation, one can figure out what is bothering them and do something about that, okay? I'm newlywed Balat Shuv, age 33. My husband and I are having terrible fights while I'm Nida. I had hoped that this time would strengthen and deepen our love. Now I'm disappointed. Do you have any help or suggestions? Okay, and we do. We sit down, we talk with them, we talk about what's bothering them most. More often than not, it's because they're not aware of the full breadth of the halacha, or they're not necessarily keeping the halacha in the only possible way it can be kept, and you can, like, fix it, so they're more happy to do it. Also, people are willing to discuss punctures, okay? They're willing to come out and say, I know I did something wrong, now what do I do? Okay? They're willing to challenge the system. Okay? And I think most important is that one of the things that we are providing on the various website is knowledge. Okay? Educating women, because I am a very firm believer, as Sai Sim says, that an educated computer is the best customer, and the website can provide it as well. This is an example. This is, if you go on to www.yoatzot.org, this is the portal page. It actually can get you to all the different programs that are offered by Nishmat. If one goes into the Women's Health and Halacha Yoatzot site, English, what one comes to is the following homepage. And one has an opportunity to do a lot of things, okay? First of all, one can read things about things like books, courses, refreshers, okay? I'm trying to go down. You also have questions, okay, on each page. If you go into one of the sections that are on the side there, so you can pick a topic, and under the topic, you will have a question, you will have the answer. And if you go back. No, I don't see this. Also, what you'll have under each section is a choice of either looking at previously asked questions or articles. Okay? For things that have come up very often, such as what contraception can I use during breastfeeding? That's already an article. Fasting while breastfeeding? That's already an article. Things having to do with explaining principles in Tarat HaMishpacha? Those are already articles. There are about 150 articles on the site at the moment. So that was the original role of the Yoatzot Halacha, which was to be able to just answer questions that women have. One of the things that started coming up is that, very nice, a woman gets an answer to her question, and now she has to go and talk to her doctor. And often when one goes and talks to one's doctor and starts trying to explain what keeping Hilchot Nida is about, they look at you and say, you are actually keeping these 2,000-year-old taboos. And my feeling was that if one could explain Tarat HaMishpacha in the language, in medicalese, then doctors would be more willing to treat their patients in a culturally appropriate manner. Since cultural medicine is very in, it's just a matter of explaining it as a cultural phenomenon, not a religious phenomenon. And for that purpose, we have another website called Jewish Women's Health. On the left there, you have the guide for the medical professionals, which is Tarat HaMishpacha in medicalese. Okay, it also brings up other issues in Jewish medical ethics are in there as well. Genetic testing, abortion. You know, it's not only Tarat HaMishpacha, but it's the kinds of medical questions that could come up for a woman who is keeping Tarat HaMishpacha. On the right-hand side is actually the wish list, in the hopes that one day in the future there will also be a guide of halachic professionals, which is to explain medicine in halachic terminology. Okay, but that's still waiting for somebody to fund it. Okay, this is when you go into the medical sites. You also have the opportunity to send in questions under Consult Us. There are articles. There are cases that are brought in, you know, to sort of give examples of how these halachot are applied in real life. There's also what I call Nida in a nutshell, okay, 250 words on explaining Nida to your average doctor. And one of the things we're working on right now is actually the ability for women to be able to just print it out and bring it to the doctor. And this was actually something that was brought up by one of the women who was using the site, who said, this is great, but I don't think my doctor would ever go online to do it. But if I brought it to him on a piece of paper, then he might read it. So we're busy working on that as well. Switching over to other forms of education, and this actually does go back to my life in medical school. I got married at the end of first year of medical school. Okay, I was the last one engaged in my class and the first one married. After a short engagement of 4 months, that happened right after we finished our tests, had 3 weeks off, 3 weeks, and I know the first thing I came back to was GYN pathology, which was not necessarily the best thing one wanted to know about right after one got married, but that's what it was. And at the time, the idea of doing something like taking a college course was ridiculous. I didn't have time for anything. The truth was, back in those days, there were no college courses in either Manhattan or the Bronx that I would have taken anyway. The only place that they were available was somewhere out in Borough Park, and I knew myself, having graduated from Ramaz, that if I took a college class in Borough Park, that would probably be the end of my going to the mikvah. So I did my best learning it by myself. But I still sort of always had this feeling that it would be really nice if there was an online course for really busy kalut, okay? Because some of the things having to do before you're getting married, it really helps to have an individual contact, but not all 12 hours of it, okay? Some of it can really be learned on oneself, and then one can go with specific questions afterwards. Or alternatively, even if one has the luxury of 12 to 20 hours to spend with one's college teacher, it's always good to have refresher, a way that you can review what it is that you learned. For those purposes, the College Companion was devised and is up and running, and about 150 kalot have used it, including at least a few very busy ones, because I know I worked with one kala. She was living in Israel. He was living in America. They were getting married somewhere in Israel and going back and forth over about 4 or 5 months. So the idea of them, you know, getting to actually sit down and learn would have been impossible without this. She did most of it online over the time and then came and met with me for about 2 hours. In the College Companion, basically it's on a lesson-by-lesson basis. If you look across the top, you'll see the various topics that we cover. At the bottom of every page, one has the ability to actually send in a question. Like if something wasn't very clear, one could send in a question that's answered by Yoetzet. At the end of every unit, there are these nice little questions. You know, it's called multiple choice questions. And in Israel, they call them Ivchan Amerikai. And at the end, after you answer the questions, you know, you have this nice little drop down that tells you whether you got the right answer or not. And that's, you know, so it's actually a real course. This past year, we also made an online review course because, as much as there may be shortage of college teachers in some places, there's an even greater shortage of review courses because often they're not available, and if they're available, they're just the time that you're not able to do it. So this can be done online whenever one wants. And that's basically what the Yoad Sod are up to at this point. It's incredibly international. I mean, the next thing that will be going online is a Spanish version of the College Companion. Why a Spanish version? That's not true. I do speak a word of Spanish. I had 20 sentences of Spanish, which I could do 70% of pediatrics. Because when I finished medical school, I did my residency in a Shomer Shabbos residency, which no longer exists, in Rutgers. And then I stayed on faculty there for 4 years. And one of my jobs in the faculty was I was running a charity clinic in Princeton, New Jersey. Now most people are saying like Princeton charity, but you have to remember that somebody had to clean those houses. Okay, so all the illegal immigrants from Guatemala who were cleaning the houses were my patients. And I unfortunately took French in high school, but I learned 20 sentences of Spanish with which one could take care of most pediatric complaints. However, the reason we have a Spanish version of the College Companion is because a woman from Chile saw the website, contacted me, said this is like really amazing, we need to have something like this in Spanish, and I'm willing to do it, you know, volunteer to translate it. So she in fact volunteered and translated it, somebody else volunteered and edited it, And when the woman who edited it comes back from maternity leave to finish the last lesson that didn't get finished, it will actually go live. An even spookier story is that I was contacted by a woman who lives in Germany who volunteered to translate it as well into German. So at some point there may also be a German version as well, but the Spanish one is almost a reality. I have 90%. Okay, so that's sort of an overview of medicine halacha and yoatzot halacha, and now there's time for questions. And we need the brave Nachshon to be the first questioner, because otherwise the rabbi starts asking questions.
It's the last thing you want.
Yes?
This is probably a stupid question, so forgive me.
There are no stupid questions.
My question is, I was wondering, so for someone who has a question, for example, in the articles you have about breastfeeding and fasting, do you suggest that the person can go online, read that article, and paskin, you know, whatever answers offered for themselves? Or do you suggest that they take that knowledge and then go with that?
I think it depends on the situation, okay? I think certain things, and especially the things that would be in an article, are straightforward. Wherever they're not straightforward, one of the things that I tried to do is point out there is a machloket about this particular point, ask your local rabbi. And therefore, I think what one can do is go in and ask a much more educated question in terms of just, you know, sort of going in saying, like, you know, do pregnant women fast on Yom Kippur, and then, you know, go through a long thing. One can go in and say, okay, I know pregnant women in general should be fasting Yom Kippur, however my obstetrician is afraid of XYZ, what should I be doing this year on Yom Kippur? Okay, so I mean, a lot of times, not all questions that come in are automatically posted. And one of the reasons, they go through a whole nother process. In other words, when a question comes into the website, a yoetzet reads it, she immediately sends out an answer, usually within about 2-3 days. And then there's a whole other cycle where the question is read again in terms of deciding, is this something we want to post? All right? And part of the decision in terms of deciding if we want to post it is, if a woman would paskin for herself based on this question, are we doing something wrong? Okay? And if it's a straightforward thing, that's what the halacha is, and it's straightforward, so if she does what the same woman does in the same circumstances, great. If it's something that individual circumstances will vary, then we wouldn't post it. We also have a caveat at the end of every single question saying, you know, individual circumstances may change the halacha, please check with the local rabbi. Okay? But we are cognizant of the fact that most people don't listen to what their doctors say, and therefore we keep in mind that, let's say the woman did try to do this herself, would it be causing a big problem or not?
If the yoatzet isn't associated with a particular shul, how do people know that she's available, or how does she work?
Okay, you brought up a whole nother way. So far what I talked about actually in the lecture is yoatzot who are answering questions on the hotline, yoatzot are answering questions on the website. But especially in the United States, there are yoatzot who are answering questions individually associated with shuls. Right now, with the Riverdale has a yoatzot, Teaneck has a community yoatzot, and Manhattan has a community yoatzot, which is together with a bunch of shuls. I don't think I forgot anybody. First of all, those yoatzot will take it even not from their shul. Okay, people definitely call them up. But if anyone's in a community that doesn't have a personal yoatzot, there's a hotline, there's a website. And we get from across the world. I mean, I mentioned Chile. My favorite story, and this is totally true, was a woman who sent in a question to the Hebrew version of the website, which is another thing I didn't mention, that about the last year, we now have a Hebrew website. I'm trekking in the Himalayas. This is my question. I will next have access to the internet in 2 days. Please make sure that you get my answer back in 2 days. Okay? I have had questions from women who are doing their postdocs in Finland. I have had questions from women who are in Peru. I mean, mamash across the world. So, yeah. Available at all times. The website tends to make it a little bit easier because one doesn't have to worry so much about the time differences, but You know, because that line works on Israel time, like 6 to midnight and things like that. Yes?
So is it the Yom Tov that are answering the questions on the website?
Mm-hmm.
So what happens if, I don't know, 2 different Yom Tov have 2 different opinions?
Well, first of all, unlike on the hotline, okay, you know, it's so to answer the question directly, and only if they feel that it's a more complicated situation do they ask a rav. On the website, because this is in writing, we made a conscious decision that every single question that gets posted is first going to go through Rav Henkin. Okay? So every question before it's posted goes to Rav Henkin, and therefore there is a certain amount of consistency in terms of what we answer. Also, a lot of times, because we're not talking to individual women, we often try to answer the question in a way like, these are the issues, okay? If you want an individual psak, either speak to your local rabbi or get back to us and ask for a psak. Yes?
How many Yoatzot do you have working with the hotline and with the website?
Okay, so the website, we're a staff of 4, okay? Myself, who was a supervisor, and for the first 4 years was everything, but thank God I no longer am. A Yoetzet, who is the real power behind the throne, because she's the one who edits everything, posts everything, keeps track of everything, because one of the side effects of doing a lot of things together is one doesn't necessarily do such a good job of keeping track of what I'm doing. And we have 2 other Yoetzot who answer questions. So at this point, most of the questions are answered by the 2 Yoetzot that answer questions. Any question that has a medical component goes through me before it gets answered. And I go through every single question before it gets posted on the website. Yeah.
So it seems like a lot of the questions you get are not within the system, like what I do in situation X, Y, or Z, but questions that seem to challenge the system, like I can't, you know, it's not hard for me to keep Tarsa Mishpacha, or Tarsa Mishpacha is not working for me. So,
I don't think that's not true. Okay, I mean, I happen to have brought examples of challenging the system because I think that's one of the things that's unique. However, most of the questions actually have more to do with how to keep it.
And then within the question that challenges the system, is there some sort of like approach you developed across the design of your Yoetzot that you have there, or do you ever advocate doing something that's not completely halachic, which is the person there? This seems like there's no simple Shulchan Aruch to answer that question.
Yeah, there's the fifth book of the Shulchan Aruch, which is Common Sense. I would say the first approach that we take to these questions, and it works in the majority of cases, is to find out what's bothering her. And most of the time, it has to do with a misunderstanding of halacha. Okay? I won't say that's all of them, and there's certainly some cases where whatever, but I would say about 80% of it is a woman who is sitting there and being very resentful about keeping something that she doesn't necessarily have to keep. Okay, you know, she was taught in a very this manner, and she doesn't understand all the breadth of halacha, and you know, so I think most of the times we actually help women to deal with it. I also realized I didn't totally answer your question because I also only told how many women were on the website. I think there are 20 women now who are working on the hotline. We have 3 community Yoetzot here in the United States. We have 2 community Yoetzot in Israel. And then all the rest of the Yoetzot, many of them are doing various educational things having to do with Taharat HaMeshpacha, either in their capacities as, you know, community rebbetzins or in their capacities as teachers. And I think every single Yoetzot answers at least 3 questions a week, just when she's going to the supermarket, when she's whatever. I mean, one of the things is, you as doctors, you will experience this, okay? The people knocking on your door on Shabbos, the people stopping you after shul asking about their kid's fever, etc. So doctors have it. Yoetzot have the same thing. And I personally have a triple whammy. I get the questions as a doctor, the questions as a Yoetzet, and the questions as a lactation consultant. So we get it a lot. But in the meantime, the truth is most of my family is fairly well-trained to answer the breastfeeding questions even without me, and that includes my teenage sons. Tarat HaMishpacha, they're a little bit embarrassed to handle. Actually, it was just this week on one night, someone come knocking at my door at 10 o'clock at night, big gash in his forehead. I saw him from the porch and realized he needed to go to the local med emergency. This wasn't something I was just going to glue back together. I come back in to my husband and he said, he should have been wearing a helmet. He got off easy. So with what I started the lecture on, you see, I say it all the time. Yes. Okay, it's mostly funded by any donations one can get. Just because the large donations are large and the small donations are small, it's mostly funded by large donations. We do get sometimes women are grateful and send in questions, but unfortunately not all of them. If everybody did, then we'd be in a better financial situation than we are. But some do. I mean, it's easier on the website because it's written. So all over the website, you know, when you send in a question, you get an answer. It's like, you know, please send a donation. Your donation helps keep this service going. On the hotline, it's harder to do that because someone's, you know, pouring out your heart to, you know, your heart and all the difficulties and all the personal details. You're not about to say, I know, will you please send an 18 sale? You know, like, so we don't do it. But, you know, some women do it. But funding is definitely a big issue. And it hasn't gotten better in the last year or so.
Has the educational program been saved since the beginning, or has it been developing in the first years?
It's pretty much the same as it's been since the beginning. I mean, first of all, the halachic stuff that we learn is very much the traditional curriculum that it's been for the last hundreds of years and is pretty much set by the Rabbanut exam. Even though we don't take the Rabbanut exam directly, we take an oral exam, not a written exam. It's the same stuff. And I know it's exactly the same stuff because Rav Werhaftig, who is the one who teaches us, also teaches in Machon Harry Fischel, teaching the men, and he uses his same notes, and we use the same crib notes, or the same cliff notes, self-study for the test. The supplementary stuff, you know, has gotten some fine-tuning over the years in terms of, as you are sort of out in the field and say, oh, I wish I had learned more about X. So effort was made to make sure to invite somebody who could talk, you know, who could talk about X.
I was going to say, is there any continuing education for the ISO? Like, as they encounter women, I feel like the learning that counseling does is probably very different than learning about it.
Right. So we have had some over time. I mean, we've had at least once or twice a year we have gotten together to discuss topics. It has been an ongoing effort to try to say, well, how are we going to keep doing it, because you're now talking about 60 women who live all over the United, you know, all over Israel, some in the United States, and most of us have other jobs and are very, very busy. So it's a need. It happens sometimes. It should probably happen more. And some of the technology is now in the website. Like, we have the ability to do a forum on the administrative side of the website so the OSO can talk to each other privately without it going up on the website. But we haven't actually used it yet. But one step at a time. Yeah?
About what percentage of the OSO are in medical profession, and what kinds of qualifications do you have to have for attending?
Okay, so there are now 1.9 MDs in the program, okay? Until this past year, there was one. There's one who is almost finished with her fourth year of medical school, okay? After she, like, took some time off to take a baby, came back in, this sort of thing. So at one point, I'll figure out exactly when she graduates, but for all intents and purposes, she is finished, and I am very happy to have another one. The majority of Yoetzot actually come to it more from the side of learning. So they're, you know, teachers or PhDs in Bible or, you know, various things in education. We do have one who is who is a psychologist, okay, a practicing psychologist. We have another one who was a nurse, okay, but, you know, that's 4 out of 60. so it's small. The qualifications to be accepted to the program were, number one, the ability to be able to learn the traditional texts, which particularly in the first class was a bit of a challenge in terms of knowing what that was going to be, because to put you back not 20 years ago, but 30 years ago, the idea of a girl or woman learning Gemara was scandalous. Okay? When I personally was in high school and learning Gemara, I mean, people were really saying things to me like, if you're going to be so dumb and stupid and keep learning this, no guy will ever marry you. And I always said, I only have to find one. So not only did I find one, but I met him as a chavrusa. So there, in Camp Marsha. So, you know, it really, I joke that for the first Yoetzot class, basically Rabbi Henkin took the learners out of the closet. At this point already, it's not such a big deal, and it was actually, my chavrusa was 10 years younger than me, and she had no idea what I was talking about learning Gemara being an issue. Like, of course women can learn Gemara. What's a big deal? I mean, what are you talking about? So things have progressed very fast in that department. Another qualification was supposed to be Yirat Shamayim. How they measured that, I have no idea. And the third qualification was leadership ability. How they measured that, I'm also not sure. But especially at the beginning, the idea is to train women who are going to do something with it. Okay, it's an expensive program. It requires a lot of funding. And you don't want, the OSL themselves do not pay tuition at this point. They get a stipend, not a big one, but something. And if you're going to invest all this money into somebody, you want to make sure to be investing in somebody who's going to do something with it. At this point, also, all the Yoetzot have to be married. That was something that was debated for a long time, because on the one hand, if you have a very learned woman, why should you prevent her from becoming a Yoetzot and doing something with her learning just because she's not married? But the feeling, at least at the beginning, was if you're going to be talking to other married women about these intimate things, married women feel more comfortable speaking to a married woman. It's still up for debate. Okay, I mean, they still have to be married, but maybe that would change at some point in the future. I would say, especially for those people who answer it over the hotline or website, no one knows their marital status anyway, but that's where we are at the moment. Yes?
Can you say something about the program? This is a one-year, full-time
program? It's a two-year program, okay. It was actually two full days a week. It was Mondays and Wednesdays from about 8 in the morning to 4 o'clock in the afternoon for two solid years, plus Sunday nights, which was when the supplementary lectures were given. I used to jokingly call them the CME. And that goes on over 2 years. It adds up to over 1,000 hours.
Is there any plans, I heard rumors here and there, to bring a separate hotline to America on American time?
That would totally be funding. Okay? I mean, due to the generosity of IDT, the hotline at least is free from the United States. Having more hours at the hotline would simply be a matter of finding somebody to fund it, because there's certainly enough Yoetzot to man it. It's not that hard to be able to, you know, find someone to do it. But the funding is actually so tight that we used to have Friday morning hours. Those are cut. That must be a hint. Okay.
I was wondering, like, there are so many different ways to keep up with the Orthodox system. Are there ever issues of conflict between a woman asking a question and her husband?
Yes, but they often come up, unfortunately, not so much later in marriage, but at the beginning. And I think that one of the things that is really important is that there needs to be more consistency between the people who are training grooms and the people who are training brides. Because, you know, sometimes the bride is trained about something and then her husband was trained differently and he thinks, oh, he's not from, because, I mean, we've been in these kinds of things. So one of the other wishes, and it's in the hotline, so we have the Kala companion, we have the marriage companion, what's missing is the Chassan companion. All right? And we've actually gotten as far as having a number of volunteer male rabbis go through the course, give the male perspective of it, and we need the funding to actually get it up there, which would help prevent some of this. Because if you're both trained the same way and you're both asking questions to the same rabbi, then it's not a problem. Or it's also the more educated a woman is, even if her husband knows something different, if you understand the framework of halacha, so you know, okay, so that's that shita and I'm this shita, but they're both legitimate. So it all gets back to education. Okay, so I think those lights going down was probably a bit of a hint. If anyone wants a personal question, I can stay around for another couple of minutes. Thank you very much.
Time. Anyone who is interested is invited to purchase the book.